I was told you had a movie idea for me.
Yes, sir, I do. See, last month, my wife and my brother went on vacation together alone.
Oh my god, I'm so sorry.
No, what? Don't be sorry. They accidentally forgot me at home.
Are you sure that's what happened?
Well, yeah, of course. Why else would they not bring me on a vacation to Paris?
All right, I mean, okay.
And so, you know, I got to be home all alone.
That's great, buddy.
It was great. I ate candy, I watched movies, I went grocery shopping all by myself.
Okay, to be honest, I'm not getting what the movie idea is, and I'm getting a little sad.
Right, so I was thinking, if I'm having such an amazing time, imagine if this happened to an 8-year-old kid.
You want to make a movie where a child's wife cheats on him?
What? No, I want a kid to be accidentally left at home while his family goes on vacation.
I guess my question is, how would that ever happen?
Well, his family leaves on a vacation and they don't realize he's not with them.
Yeah, but okay, it just seems like a really, 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 really improbable thing.
Oh yeah, I'm well aware.
Okay, so?
Well, I was doing some research and there's this thing in storytelling called the suspension of disbelief.
What's that?
They say that the audience sacrifices realism and logic for the sake of enjoyment.
Oh, so the audience will kind of just overlook unrealistic things?
Right, so I think if we exploit that to like an extreme level, we're good.
Huh. Interesting.
So I think I figured out like the perfect storm of unrealistic coincidences to get this premise off the ground.
All right, you got me, I'm listening.
Okay, so first off, the kid has to be part of a huge family. Like it has to be big enough that you wonder if they've ever heard of birth control. Plus some uncles and cousins can be there too. They also all have to be really mean to the kid so he can wish that they would disappear. Then they also have to accidentally throw his plane ticket in the trash. Then they also have to make him sleep in the attic so they don't see him when they're leaving. There also has to be a huge storm the night before the departure that knocks out the phone line so they can't contact him when they're gone. That storm also has to knock out the power. That way their alarms can shut off in the night and they wake up late for their flight. Also, the kid needs to sleep so heavily that he doesn't hear 15 people running around and yelling. There also has to be a random little kid that shows up at the exact moment they're doing a head count so they can get it wrong. Then we have to have nobody think of him even a little bit until they're mid-flight.
So they really have to be like an awful family.
They have to be the worst family. Oh yeah, also then the kid has to wake up and think he's magic because he wished that they disappeared and they did.
Wouldn't he just make the connection that they were supposed to leave on a trip that morning?
You'd think so, but if we have him not understand what an airport shuttle is, he can look at their cars and be like, there's no way they could have gotten to the airport without those. So he thinks he magically erased his family from existence?
Right.
So just to be clear, we need to have all those extremely unlikely scenarios play out one after the other just to get this kid alone at home by himself?
That's right.
And this suspension
of disbelief.
Right, with that, people will just be okay with all of that.
Apparently, yeah.
All of that.
Yeah, pretty cool, right?
Well, then awesome.
So tell me more about this kid,
Kevin McAllister. Well, you know how his family is the worst?
Yeah, I imagine he's like the only nice one in the family.
Oh no, he's also the worst.
Oh, he is?
Yeah, he calls his mom a dummy and he's really snarky with everyone. He's also unable to pack a suitcase, like it's the end of the world for him to do that.
And how does he get over the trauma of the situation?
The trauma? Well, I mean, in Kevin's mind, he's essentially just killed his family with a wish. I imagine that's gonna be hard for him to come to terms with.
Actually, super easy, barely an inconvenience.
Really?
Well, I probably should have mentioned before that Kevin is a psychopath.
Oh yeah. We're talking complete disregard for the physical and emotional well-being of everyone he comes across in his life. And he talks to himself, kind of a lot.
So he's happy that they're dead.
He's thrilled. He has a little eyebrow celebration thing and then he does all the exact same stuff I did when I was home alone, except I didn't shave.
Does anything else happen, or do we just watch a kid go crazy at home by himself?
Well, I'm glad you asked, because that's where things get really interesting.
How's that?
Well, it turns out that two burglars have their hearts set on breaking into the McAllister house.
So why this house in particular?
One of them mentioned something about it probably having some VCRs.
VCRs are great.
And they always will be. So these guys think that the house is empty because they've been casing the joint.
Oh no.
But Kevin finds out that they want to break in.
So he calls the cops?
No. Well, eventually.
Eventually? Why not right away?
Because of the psychopath thing.
Oh, I don't get it.
Well, the bandits break in, but Kevin is like some kind of genius. Like he set up a bunch of intricate death traps that they walk into one by one.
But you said the kid was freaked out about packing a suitcase, like that was too much.
Oh, right.
And now he's like a death trap engineer?
Yeah, no, that's a mistake. I'll change the suitcase thing. That doesn't make any sense.
Meh, it's probably fine.
You sure?
Eh,
it's no problem. I could change it to something that makes the whole death trap engineer make sense.
Nah, keep the suitcase thing. It's all good.
Okay, so he's too stupid to pack a suitcase, but He's great at traps.
So what happens with the robbers?
Well, they somehow survive a bunch of very, very fatal injuries.
Wow.
Yeah, and in the middle of the robbery, it seems like they forget that they wanted to rob the house, and now they just want to murder this child.
It becomes about murder.
It seems that way. Because at a certain point, Kevin just leaves them alone in the house, and they don't take anything.
Just focused on the kid, no more VCRs.
Yep, so at the end, they get arrested because they tried to break in and murder a child. It's very dark. And then overnight, he manages to clean up all the traps, including some stairs covered in tar. And then his family comes back the next day and immediately ignore him again.
Hmm, what do you think?
Well, I think it might have some potential, but it's missing something, some kind of big selling point.
Do you have anything in mind?
Well, we could try the Christmas play. I mean, that rarely works, but
what's that?
That's when you make a movie take place at Christmas time, even if it has almost nothing to do with Christmas time.
So people think, oh, this is a Christmas movie. I have to watch it.
Exactly.
Would that work if I just add in a couple of random Christmas elements?
Well, it's certainly not going to be a Christmas classic, but it's worth a shot.
So you have a Home Alone sequel script for me?
Yes, sir, I do. And it only took me like 20 minutes to put together.
How is that possible?
Well, I just took every single story beat and plot point from the first movie and made them all a little more intense or elaborate.
Oh, that's smart, because people liked the first movie. They gave me money to see it.
Right, so I figured they'd pay us a bunch of money to see it again, but different.
I love it already. So how are we kicking things up a notch?
Well, instead of being alone at home, this time Kevin is going to be alone in New York City.
Oh, New York City is much bigger than a home.
I thought so.
So how does Kevin end up alone in NYC?
Well, the family's planning on heading down to Florida for Christmas, but the dad accidentally unplugs the alarm clock the night before they leave, so they have to rush to the airport again.
They have one alarm clock for a house of 14 people, and they don't double check it before bed.
That's what we're going with.
Stretching that suspension of disbelief real thin.
Yes, sir, I am.
Wow.
So anyway, everybody's running through the airport, and Kevin tells his dad, hey dad, I need batteries for my Talkboy recorder thing.
So the dad's like, I'll give you the batteries on the plane. We're extremely late and this is not a priority at all.
No, he hands Kevin a bag that has his wallet and some cash in it.
There's no way anyone would actually do that though.
I know, but this way Kevin will have some spending money in New York.
Okay, so we're taking another little break from logic so that can happen.
Oh yeah, we're gonna take a lot of those kinds of breaks.
I guess we'll have to.
And so Kevin gets separated from his family and follows someone he thinks is his dad onto the wrong plane.
Isn't it hard for him to get past airport employees and security?
Actually, super easy. Barely an inconvenience.
Oh really?
Yeah, the airport people just kind of take Kevin's word for it that his dad's on that plane.
I didn't realize how laid back airport security was.
Yeah, well, it's the early 90s right now, so airport security isn't that much of a concern yet.
Fair enough. Vaguely ominous statements about the future are tight.
Yeah, I guess that was pretty weird of me.
So how does Kevin not realize that he's not on the same plane as his family?
Well, his mom said that because it's Christmas time, they couldn't get seats together. They were lucky to even be on the same flight.
So how is there an empty seat for him on the New York plane?
I don't know.
Fair enough.
So yeah, then Kevin's gonna get to New York and the fun's gonna begin.
Wow, so what does he do?
Oh, well, he's gonna go to a fancy hotel and commit a bunch of credit card fraud and identity theft to get a room.
Oh my god.
But like in a cute way.
Okay, good.
Yeah, but this one concierge thinks the whole thing is super suspicious.
Oh, so he stops Kevin before he goes up to the room?
No, later he's gonna sneak into Kevin's room.
Oh, he is?
Yeah, well, he wants to confirm his suspicions that Kevin is alone in there.
So best case scenario in this guy's mind, he's breaking into a child's room and finding that child all alone.
Well, it sounds creepy when you say it like that.
I think it sounds creepy any way you say it, because it's super creepy.
Maybe.
And what else happens in New York?
Oh, well, Kevin's gonna have to deal with some bad guys again.
Oh, I guess the city is a perfect place to introduce some wacky new criminals.
Well, actually, I was thinking it could be Harry and Marv from the first movie.
But weren't they arrested in Chicago?
Yeah.
So how would that even be possible?
Well, they escaped from prison and got onto a fish truck that ended up in New York City on the same day that Kevin McAllister arrived.
My disbelief is so suspended right now.
Yeah, and they keep crossing paths with Kevin on the street, so eventually Harry's like, hey, that's the kid that sent us to jail.
They keep crossing paths with him?
Yeah, you know how you always just kind of come across the same people in New York?
That almost never happens. There are like 7 million people in New York.
Oh, I thought there were like 200.
You thought there were 200 people living in New York City?
Yeah, now you're telling me 7 million. This whole thing seems pretty far-fetched.
Won't this kind of be covered by the whole suspension of disbelief thing?
I don't know. I have people running into each other kind of a lot.
Oh, you do?
Yeah, Kevin keeps running into the same crazy bird lady. Marv gets hit in the face twice by the same lady on separate occasions.
How does that happen?
Well, later Marv and Harry manage to grab Kevin, right?
Okay.
And so to escape, Kevin pinches a random lady's butt. And it turns out to be the same exact woman that Marv had sexually harassed earlier that day.
Wow, what are the odds of that?
Well, I thought there were 1 in 200.
Right.
Anyway, so Marv and Harry's big plan is to rob this place called Duncan's Toy Store and then fly away to an island.
Pretty horrible plan.
But then Kevin decides to save Christmas by stopping them.
Okay.
And then he lures them to his uncle's house that's undergoing renovations, and he has a bunch of traps set up for them.
Oh, some clever traps?
Yeah, but also, you know, just throwing bricks at their faces from the roof.
Oh my god.
Yeah, Marv is gonna take like 5 bricks to the face.
That's incredibly intense.
It is. And then inside the house, we're gonna have a bunch of super deadly traps that defy physics.
But somehow, Marv and Harry just don't die.
How do they survive all that stuff?
Well, we're gonna have this big reveal where you find out that Harry and Marv are actually immortal.
What?
Yeah, so we're gonna have this psychopath kid trying to murder these two immortal beings, but they're just not dying.
I'm not sure I like the reveal of them being immortal beings.
So what, you want Kevin to successfully kill them?
No, I'd say keep all the deadly traps, just take out the reveal.
But there's no way they can survive any of that without being immortal. It's literally the only explanation that makes sense.
Yeah, I'm just not a fan of it.
Okay.
And how does the movie end?
Well, Kevin's entire family's gonna fly up to see him.
What happened to that whole thing about it being impossible to get plane tickets on Christmas?
Well, that line was at the beginning of the movie, so I'm hoping people are gonna forget we said it.
Oh, fingers crossed.
And then Kevin's dad is gonna see like a $900 hotel bill and lose his mind.
Didn't he just fly 14 people across the country twice? Why is he mad about $900?
So we can have this fun ending where he yells in the hotel room and Kevin hears him all the way in Central Park.
The dad yells in the hotel and Kevin hears him in Central Park?
Yeah, he does.
No, he doesn't.
Yeah, he does.
That's not possible.
It's a funny ending. Get off my back.
But it doesn't make any sense.
My back is where you are and I'd love for you to vacate the premises.
Okay, well I'm at least gonna try to get the Plaza Hotel, so at the very least the hotel will be right across from Central Park.
Oh, you think you can get the Plaza Hotel?
Yeah, apparently if you give the owner a cameo, you can use any of his buildings for your movies. It's like this ego thing that he has.
Wait, who owns the Plaza Hotel?
So, you have a Christmas movie for me?
Yes, sir, I do. It's based on a novel by John Grisham.
Oh, I didn't know he wrote a Christmas novel. Was it well reviewed?
Not particularly, no.
Well, you know me. I refuse to learn from others' mistakes.
That's what I love about you, sir.
So what happens in this thing?
Well, there's this couple, Luther and Nora Crank, right? And their daughter is off to Peru to join the Peace Corps.
Right, okay.
So they drop her off at the airport, and then we jump right into the comedy.
Oh boy, lay it on me. I'm ready.
Okay, so Luther needs to go into this store to buy something for Nora, right? But it's pouring rain and he forgot his umbrella.
Okay, yeah.
And so he just gets all wet.
Uh-huh.
Like really, like super just all wet. Just completely wet.
Yeah, sure.
And you know, he's not happy about it being wet. He wishes he wasn't. For sure.
Sure, yeah, no, of course.
And so, you know, I gotta be honest, sir, I thought you'd be laughing by now.
Oh, that was the funny thing?
Yeah, he gets all wet.
Well, comedy's hard.
No, it's actually super easy. Barely an inconvenience.
If you say so.
I do, so we're gonna get a good 5 minutes out of that gag.
5 minutes, wow, okay, really going in on that, it's currently raining bit.
Yeah, and so Luther's gonna see an ad for a cruise, right? And then he gets the idea to skip Christmas and go on a cruise with his wife.
Well, reasonable decision, seeing as their daughter's out of the house. Is something wrong?
Yeah, if you don't mind, I'd like to pretend you didn't say that, because this whole movie depends on that being a really wacky thing to do.
Oh, okay. What? They're gonna skip Christmas?
They're gonna skip Christmas.
Wow.
Thanks for that, sir. So anyway, Luther tells his wife about the idea.
Okay.
And she's like, okay, but can we still donate to charities like we do every year? And he's like, no, this has to be a total boycott.
Why does it have to be a total boycott?
So the movie can happen.
Okay, gotcha.
Yeah, and so then everybody in the town is gonna find out about their plan to skip Christmas.
How do they find out?
Well, Luther writes up a letter about their intentions and shoves it in his coworkers' faces.
Oh my god, why is he being so aggressive about it?
I don't know.
So is he like the unlikable guy in this thing? Like an anti-hero?
Well, I wouldn't say that, no, because every character is unlikable.
Every character?
Every single character, sir, almost especially the protagonist.
Jeez, so there's no save the cat moment to make us empathize with him?
There's not, no. In fact, Luther keeps stepping on a cat.
Oh my god.
He also freezes it rock solid in ice.
What? Why?
Well, he iced up his entire walkway so people would fall and hurt themselves.
Oh, that's incredibly dangerous.
Yeah, head trauma's hilarious.
Yikes.
So what do these jerks get up to next?
Well, since the townspeople aren't happy about the Kranks skipping Christmas, they all get together and, you know, start bullying them until they conform.
Oh my god.
Yeah, like the people that usually sell them a Christmas tree got all mad because they're not buying one.
Just no decorations?
Total boycott, sir. No decorations whatsoever, except for a
big Christmas wreath on their front door for some reason.
Pretty weird and public exception to make.
And everybody wants them to put up their big frosty decoration, especially their neighbor Frohmeyer.
Really none of his business.
Well, he makes it his business. He chases down Nora's car and grabs her window.
Oh, that's straight up harassment.
Hilarious harassment. So then she rolls up her window and his gloves get caught in it. So she just screams her head off. She just loses her mind.
Okay, pretty weird reaction.
Some might say a funny reaction.
Somehow I doubt they will.
Well, so if I'm understanding correctly, this is going to be the cranks explaining to various people that they're skipping Christmas, those people getting angry about it, and then it's on to the next scene?
Pretty much, yeah, that's a good way to describe it.
Wow. We're also going to sprinkle some comedy bits in there.
Oh yeah, like what?
Well, they go get tans before their vacation, right? And then their priest sees them in their bathing suits.
Is that the entire joke?
That's the entire joke. And in another scene, Luther gets Botox, so he has trouble eating.
Is that also the entire joke?
That's also the entire joke, sir, and it's gone by the next scene, never to be spoken of again.
So you're just kinda doing stuff, huh?
Yeah, I'm just kinda doing stuff, I don't know.
Oh, just kinda doing stuff is tight.
So anyway, after I burn through a bunch of runtime with nothing, they're gonna get a call from their daughter.
Oh, what does she want?
Well, she's surprising them and coming home for Christmas.
Wait, didn't she just leave?
That's right, just a couple weeks earlier, but now she's coming back for Christmas. So she spent thousands of dollars on multiple plane tickets, why not just leave after Christmas?
I don't know.
Very irresponsible spending.
Also, she's engaged now.
Sure, that may as well be a thing.
It's gonna be.
So they explain to her that they booked a cruise?
No, they lie to her.
Why?
So the movie can keep happening.
Oh, okay. So now they have to scramble and get together a Christmas party before she gets back.
Because they couldn't help from lying to their adult daughter?
Exactly. So the whole town just gathers together, because now the cranks are ready to conform.
Wait, what's the message of this movie?
No time to think about that.
Oh, okay.
So then some cops go pick up the daughter at the airport, but then they need to stall so the conformists can prep the party.
Right.
So they pretend to be stopping a criminal, but they stumble upon an actual criminal.
Wow, what are the odds of that?
Oh, odds don't matter when I'm pulling all of this out of my...
As this cop stuff is happening, are we gonna see the party get set up too?
We sure are, sir. There's gonna be all kinds of wacky hijinks.
Oh yeah, like what?
Like the lights not working, but then being fixed.
Oh, a very fun minor obstacle.
And so they all have a nice evening, but that criminal tries to steal stuff from their house.
And not all the fully empty houses full of presents on the block.
That's right, and then as he's trying to escape, he gets hit in the head by a guy dressed as Santa.
Oh.
Yeah, and it turns out this is a guy we actually saw at the very beginning of the movie. He was trying to sell Luther an umbrella when it was raining.
Oh, I mean... Okay.
It all ties together.
Yeah, I guess.
And so that's about it. We pull back to reveal that that guy actually was Santa Claus and he flies away with his reindeer.
What?
And so that's about it. What do you think?
Well, to be honest, it sounds like it's all over the place. Just like Christmas.
That's a good point. Plus, I think if we get the secret Christmas weapon on board, it'll be okay.
What's the secret Christmas weapon?
Tim Allen. If we get him on board, everybody's gonna love this, no matter what. So, you have a Christmas movie for me?
Yes, sir, I do. It's gonna be super violent.
What? Yeah, so this New York cop, John McClane, is on his way to Los Angeles to see his wife, Holly, on Christmas Eve.
Okay.
Yeah, and he's having a tough time on the plane, so the guy sitting next to him's like, the secret to air travel is to take your shoes off later and make fists with your toes.
That's a pretty weird thing to include in a movie.
Yeah, well, I want John to take his shoes off later, because there's gonna be a whole thing with broken glass.
Can't we just have him take off his shoes while he's changing?
I mean, I can't really have someone take their shoes off without some juicy backstory to it.
Fair enough.
So anyway, John gets a limo ride from this driver, Argyle, and he says he's gonna wait for John in the parking garage while he goes up to see his wife at her office Christmas party.
What kind of a company has their Christmas party on Christmas Eve?
The kind I made up for this movie.
Gotcha.
So anyway, then the whole Christmas party's gonna be taken over by this guy, Hans Gruber, and his crew of bad guys with beautiful hair.
Oh, so John sneaks down to the garage to Argyle?
No, the bad guys disabled the elevators below the 30th floor.
Oh, so does he try to get down using the stairs?
No, doesn't even try.
Why not?
Well, I mean, even if he did get down to Argyle, the beautiful haired bad guys closed the security gates.
Can't Argyle drive through the gates to go get some help?
Well, yeah, he can drive through them, but we're only gonna have him do that at the end of the movie.
Why?
Because that's what I wrote.
Fair enough.
Anyway, so this one bad guy is gonna try to track John down, but John's gonna get the drop on him.
Oh, what's he planning on doing?
Getting the guy to drop his machine gun.
And then what? I mean, he's not in a position to arrest anybody if
if the guy does surrender.
Well, he's gonna hit the guy on the head and wrestle with him and end up breaking his neck.
Feels like he should have just shot him in the first place when he had the chance.
Yeah, well, there's gonna be kind of a recurring thing in the movie where characters don't shoot each other at key moments when they have the chance.
How come?
Because then the movie would be over and we gotta stretch this bad boy out.
Fair enough. Stretching out bad boys is tight.
Oh, that's the worst sentence I've ever heard.
Yeah, that didn't sound right at all, and I apologize.
Anyway, so then John puts the dead guy in the elevator so the other bad guys see him.
What?
Yeah, he's gonna write, "Now I have a machine gun on his chest." It's gonna be hilarious.
He's gonna give up the element of surprise so we can taunt them a little bit.
Well, not only that, he's also gonna eavesdrop on them and learn what their names are.
He didn't have to send them a dead body to eavesdrop on them.
Yeah, probably would have made his life easier if he hadn't done that.
Whoops.
Whoopsie. So then later this cop is gonna pass through when John has to get his attention.
Oh, and is that gonna be hard for him to do from all the way up in the building?
No, it's gonna be super easy. Barely an inconvenience.
Oh, really?
Yeah, he's just gonna throw the dead body of another guy he killed onto the cop's car.
Wait, now that I think of it, he could have just fired his gun to get the cop's attention.
Probably, but this guy's like really into communicating using dead bodies.
Sure sounds that way.
And then some more law enforcement's gonna show up and this police chief is gonna take over.
Oh, what's his deal?
Well, I had to make him unbelievably stupid so the movie could keep on going.
Oh, you did?
Yeah, like he thinks the dead guy full of bullet holes that was thrown out the building killed himself.
It is unbelievable that a human being could be that stupid.
Well, if the law enforcement people were competent at all, the movie would end, so I kinda had to make them all into walking plot devices.
Oh, so they're all just there to make dumb decisions and pad the runtime?
Exactly. Like, some of them are gonna try to break through glass doors with a blowtorch. They're gonna be really dumb.
Wow.
But the first cop that showed up is actually a good guy.
Oh, he is?
Yeah, like when John McClane isn't talking to himself, which he does kind of a lot, he's gonna be talking to this guy.
And what's his deal?
Well, he's gonna have this backstory where he lost his cop mojo after accidentally killing a kid who was playing with a toy gun. It's gonna be really sad.
Wait, is the sad part that he killed a kid or that he lost his cop mojo?
We're certainly gonna play it like the tragedy is that he lost his cop mojo.
Interesting.
Yeah, so in the end, he's gonna have this story arc where he regains the confidence to, you know, shoot people again.
Wow, well, good for him.
We're also gonna have this whole subplot with this reporter snooping around.
Oh?
Yeah, because this way Hans is gonna end up seeing on the news that Holly and John are married.
I mean, we can literally have that show up on the news. We don't need an entire reporter subplot.
Yes, we do.
Oh, okay then.
And so later, John is gonna be getting chased by bad guys and he's gonna cut his feet on some broken glass.
Right, he's not wearing any shoes and I know the entire history of that.
Yeah, he's gonna leave a huge trail of blood, but he's gonna end up escaping and losing the bad guys.
How does he manage to lose the bad guys if he's leaving a giant trail of blood?
I don't know.
Fair enough.
And so yeah, eventually John is gonna end up killing Hans Gruber and saving the day.
Very cool. And what's this thing called anyway?
Oh, I was thinking we could call it Die Hard.
What does that mean?
Well, first of all, it sounds awesome and it vaguely describes the characters and plot, I guess.
I guess, kinda.
And it's kind of a tribute to my late uncle.
Oh, was he killed in the line of duty or something?
No, he died while testing erectile dysfunction drugs.
Oh my god.
So what do you think?
Well, I mean, it sounds great, but I don't know if I'd necessarily call it a Christmas movie, you know?
Of course it's a Christmas movie. It takes place at Christmas time.
But it doesn't have to do with Christmas other than that.
But it takes place at Christmas time.
But that doesn't necessarily mean it's a Christmas movie.
Sure it does.
Tell you what, let's let people debate this amongst themselves for a while before taking an official stance on it.
How long should we let them debate?
Like maybe 3 decades or something?
Sounds good to me.
So, you have a Christmas movie for me?
Yes, sir, I do. So it's gonna be about this little kid, right? And he's not so sure he believes in Santa Claus anymore.
Oh, very sad.
But when he gets into a stranger's vehicle in the middle of the night, his whole life's gonna change.
Oh, God.
No, in like a fun Christmas way.
Oh, okay, thank goodness.
You see, this train called the Polar Express shows up, and this conductor guy's like, "All right, get on board, we're headed to the North Pole."
That's where Santa lives.
It is, yeah. So this hero boy's gonna get on the train, and he's gonna meet some of the other kids that are on there. There's this girl child, and there's this know-it-all kid who's just gonna be the worst character ever put to screen.
Oh, the worst?
Yeah, just the most annoying and arrogant kid you can imagine. People might try to attack the theater screens, to be honest.
Jeez.
Anyway, so then the conductor is gonna sing a song about hot chocolate while 8 men with identical faces pour some for all the kids.
Oh, is this a musical?
Occasionally, sure.
So what kind of stuff is he gonna sing about hot chocolate?
Not just the standard hot chocolate stuff, like, you know, you should never ever let it cool.
You gotta let it cool a little bit.
Nope, you drink it scalding hot.
All right, I mean, you seem pretty passionate about this for some reason.
Yeah, so then the little girl wants to bring some boiling hot chocolate to this poor boy, Billy, who's sitting in another part of the train.
Right.
And so the conductor brings her there, right? right? But then Hero Boy finds her ticket and he's like, oh no, I gotta get this to her.
Okay, but she's like with the conductor, right? That doesn't seem like it would be a problem.
Well, we're gonna pretend like it's a problem, and then Hero Boy's gonna go to bring it to her, but it's gonna get caught in the wind.
Oh no, I guess?
Yeah, so then this ticket flies up into the air for a little bit, and then next to some wolves, and then picked up by an eagle who brings it over a waterfall. Then a baby eagle tries to eat it and spits it up, and so then it becomes a snowball. Then it hits the front of the train, then a hobo's face, and then back into the train car and stuck to a vent. It's gonna take several minutes.
Okay, so it's back in the train now.
It's back in the train now.
So, okay, so what was that about?
Well, this is actually based on a kid's picture book that's like 30 pages long, so I gotta fill up the runtime somehow.
Oh, okay, gotcha.
So now the conductor has randomly decided to ask the girl for her ticket, but she doesn't have it, so he's like, okay, well, come with me, little girl.
Okay.
And that freaking know-it-all kid, he's like, you know, on the Polar Express, if somebody doesn't have their ticket, it's standard procedure to, you know, throw them off the back of the train.
Oh, my God.
But then Hero Boy finds her ticket, and he's like, oh, no, I gotta get this to her.
I feel like, didn't we just do this?
We just did, but this time the boy's not gonna drop the ticket.
I see.
So he goes to the top of a moving train in a blizzard and has a conversation with a hobo up there.
What?
Yeah, there's a hobo up there. He's got a fire going. He's probably a ghost. He's probably dead. Who's to say, though?
Oh, what is going on?
I don't know. Things, for sure.
All right. I mean, okay.
Oh, also, I forgot to mention, I thought we could get Tom Hanks to play practically all these characters.
What?
Yeah, just Tom Hanks, the whole dang thing.
Just have one guy play multiple characters? It's kind of a weird gimmick.
Hey, guys, I'm doing a little coffee run for the office. You guys want a coffee?
Oh, no, thank you.
Yes, I do. Scalding hot directly into my mouth.
What?
Don't you let it cool. Don't let it cool at all.
He seems to be into that.
Okay. Anyway, I figure it could be nice to have him play a bunch of characters because it kind of plays into the idea that maybe this whole thing is a dream.
Oh.
Except it's absolutely not a dream. I'll get to that later.
Oh, what?
Anyway, so then terrifying dead hobo Tom Hanks skis this little kid down the train before he gets absolutely crushed by a tunnel.
Oh, not getting crushed by a train tunnel is tight.
For sure. And then he finds the little girl, and it turns out she's just been put in charge of the train, so everything, you know, everything's okay now.
Wow, so stuff is just kind of happening, huh?
It is, yeah, for sure.
Wow.
So then the train almost falls into a lake for a second, and the little boy and the little girl go talk to that poor kid, Billy.
Oh, they do.
And he actually sings a song, because sometimes this is a musical, remember?
Right.
And so he's singing about how Christmas doesn't work out for him, and Santa never goes to his place, and he doesn't get gifts or anything.
If Santa's real, why doesn't he bring this kid toys at Christmas?
Well, see, the thing is, this kid is visibly poor, right? So, you know, that's kind of gross. Santa hates that.
Fair enough, so I guess it's gonna be tough for them to cheer this kid up.
Actually, it's gonna be super easy. Barely an inconvenience.
Oh, really?
Yeah, see, the little girl starts singing about how, no, actually, Christmas is terrific because kids get gifts. It's great.
The kid just said he doesn't get that stuff.
Oh, yeah, well, somehow it cheers him up a bit.
Okay.
So eventually they get to the North Pole, which is just a weird, hauntingly empty industrial city.
Very Christmassy.
Yeah, so they wander around this eerily empty place for quite some time, but eventually they end up in a massive crowd of elves, and they're freaking out because they're gonna get to see Santa.
Don't they see him like every day?
Well, they're still pretty pumped about it, but then the boy, he can't see Santa, so he's like, well, what the heck? I can't see anything.
Okay.
And he picks up this little sleigh bell off the ground, and he can't even hear it ring when he shakes it.
Oh, how come?
Well, because he doesn't believe yet, you know? That's his arc. He has to believe.
He's literally standing in the North Pole surrounded by elves.
Yeah, that's not cutting it for this kid. He's still like, eh. Maybe not.
Oh, very high standards.
But then he does hear it ring, and he gets to see terrifying Tom Hanks Santa Claus.
Oh, well, you know, good for him.
Yeah, and now it's time for Santa to give the first present of Christmas time, and he picks the Hero Boy to get the broken sleigh bell that he found on the floor.
Not the best gift.
Well, that's what the kid wanted, you know, it's symbolic. Anyway, he immediately loses it.
Oh.
Yeah, kid had a hole in his pocket, so then he's all sad on the train ride home.
Wow, okay, yeah, no, that didn't work out at all.
So then the conductor drops him off, and he's like, you know, one thing about trains, it doesn't matter where they're going. What matters is deciding to get on.
What is... Of course it matters where the train's going.
Yeah, definitely. Of course, yeah.
What is this guy talking about?
I don't know. I just felt like I needed some kind of line there. Didn't give it a ton of thought.
Fair enough.
And then that hobo waves goodbye and turns to snow.
Oh, yeah. What was all that about anyway?
Unclear. Maybe this is all a dream.
But you said it's not.
It's not, no, because the next morning the kid opens up a gift and it's the bell he lost.
So, okay, so what the...
Don't think about it too much. I didn't.
Okay, I won't. So how are we going to shoot this movie? This sounds complicated.
Oh, well, I figure we could animate it, you know, but make it fully motion captured. That's never been done before.
Yeah, I don't know. I feel like technology's not quite there yet. Has the potential to be a little terrifying.
Yeah, but maybe in a fun Christmas way.
Might have a lot of dead-eyed characters and Uncanny Valley vibes.
Well, look, if it is too Uncanny Valley looking and people get a little freaked out of it, we won't do it again, you know? We'll have learned our lesson.
Okay, yeah, okay, that makes sense.
Or maybe we'll do it again. I don't know.
What? So, you have a movie for me?
Yes, sir, I do. It's called Elf.
Oh, smart. Lord of the Rings is super hot right now. So who's this tall, good-looking elf man?
I was thinking that loud SNL guy, Will Ferrell.
What?
Yes, he actually has nothing to do with Lord of the Rings. It's a Christmas movie.
Oh, he's a Christmas elf.
Well, kinda. See, he was a baby at an orphanage being cared for by this old nun, and then he sneaks into Santa's bag and ends up in the North Pole.
So Santa just headed directly to the North Pole after visiting that specific orphanage and never looked in his bag again?
That's what we're going with.
So then one of the elves volunteers to raise him, so he's raised as an elf.
Oh my god.
What?
Well, that poor old nun lady.
What are you talking about?
They're not even gonna attempt to bring this baby back to the orphanage.
No.
So for the rest of her life, she's gonna be haunted by the thought that from her perspective, a child was stolen on her watch, never to be seen again.
Ooh! Right.
This is off to a dark start.
I mean, now that you mention it, yes, it definitely is, but we could pretend like it's not, maybe?
That works for me. I love pretending.
So they think his name is Buddy, because that's what was written on his diaper, but when he grows up, he doesn't really fit in with all the elf stuff, you know, like the elf showers, and he can't keep up with anyone's magical powers.
So what does he do?
Well, his adoptive father shows him a picture of his birth parents and tells him that his dad is living in New York City.
Did that nun leave a photo of his parents in his diaper to get pooped on?
I guess so. So Santa sends him off to NYC to find his dad, but warns him to not check out any peep shows.
What was that?
So he goes to see his dad, Walter, but it doesn't really go well, so he wanders into the Gimbel's department store and gets mistaken for one of the elves working in the fake Santa village.
Okay.
And he sees a beautiful employee, Jovi, and becomes infatuated with her.
Oh, I guess he wasn't attracted to little elves, but now that he sees a human woman, he's aroused for the first time.
Well, that's not a cute way to put it.
Well,
anyway, so the next morning she's showering at work and he enters the room and starts singing along with her, which freaks her out.
Oh, God. Well, yeah, that's super creepy and intrusive of him.
Well, he says he didn't know she was naked in the shower.
You said they had showers in the North Pole. How could he not know?
Hey, shut up. So then Buddy freaks out because he sees that the mall Santa isn't the real Santa and they fight and he goes to jail.
Oh, he does?
Yeah, and so Walter reluctantly bails him out and brings him to a pediatrician to get a DNA test to see if he's really his.
Doesn't it take multiple days to get results from those?
No, this is one of those pediatricians that's set up for instant DNA testing.
That's not a thing.
But it might be.
It isn't.
So the doctor tells Walter that the best thing he could do is bring this fully grown man who thinks he's an elf and has just been arrested for a violent crime into his home to meet his wife and his child.
This guy's not a real doctor.
Well, yeah, no, he's gonna be played by an actor.
Never mind.
So Buddy hangs out with the family and shows off his ability of somehow not being dead from diabetes.
And Walter's wife is just fine with this?
Yes, because if she wasn't immediately super cool with it, then I'd have to spend time on that, and I don't wanna!
Got it.
And then he accidentally shows her his genitals.
Accidentally? First the shower, now this?
Yes,
and now Buddy wants to connect with his half-brother Michael, but Michael thinks he's a weirdo.
I kinda do too.
But then he shows off his superhuman snowball throwing skills in Central Park, and they become friends.
I thought Buddy didn't have magic elf powers.
Oh, yeah, well, in this scene he does.
Oh, okay.
So they head over to Gimbel's, even though he got a restraining order, and he asked that girl Jovi out on a date.
I mean, he thinks he's an elf. He snuck into the bathroom while she was showering. He went to jail for a violent crime, and now he's defying a restraining order. It's gonna be tough to get her to go out with him.
Actually, it's gonna be super easy. Barely an inconvenience.
Oh, really?
Yeah, because he's the main character, so it's charming, so she's gonna say yes.
Oh, okay, great.
Yeah, the movie's called Elf, and he is the elf, so he's going to be desirable.
That makes sense, yeah.
So anyway, eventually Buddy really pisses his dad off by accidentally making fun of a man with dwarfism.
Oh my god.
So Buddy's all sad and depressed, and he walks up onto the Queensboro Bridge.
Is he gonna frickin' jump?
No, he's just gonna kinda sadly look at the water, but then he's gonna see frickin' Santa Claus crash into Central Park, so he's gotta run over there.
Isn't that kind of a long run?
There's no way for me to check that, so then Walter and Michael also see the crash, so they run over as well. Now the three of them have to help Santa.
Just the three of them with Santa alone in Central Park?
Yeah, just the three of them and Santa. It's not that far-fetched.
Yes, it is.
Whoa!
That's not a reaction that makes sense to what I just said.
Well, listen, a lot of other people do see the sleigh crash, but instead of going to check it out, they all just kind of gather at the edge of the park behind a news lady who's talking about it.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, just a whole bunch of people standing around in disbelief, and also Josh Rubin is there. They don't know what is going on.
Who?
And it turns out there's not enough Christmas spirit anymore to make Santa's sleigh fly, because people people don't believe in him anymore.
Well, that doesn't really make sense. I mean, the parents would see gifts under the tree each year that they themselves didn't buy. Who do they think got those?
Well, listen, sir, that's a problem with every Christmas movie, not just this one, so get all the way off my back about it.
Oh, let me get off of that thing.
So then to get more Christmas spirit going, Jovi's gonna sing and everybody's gonna join in.
I mean, that little crowd of people is probably not enough to make the sleigh fly.
We'll see, everybody watching the news is gonna start singing as well, like some bikers in a bar, a little girl in her bedroom on a little TV, the people back at the office on a projector.
Those sound like the last situations in which anyone would be watching the news.
Hey, shut up. So then they all start singing and Walter's gonna join in just in the nick of time and Santa flies right above them and he's off to deliver gifts.
Wow, so the news reporter has a huge story on her hands. Santa just flew above her head and there were a bunch of witnesses.
Well, no, see, she's speechless for a second and then the news cuts back to the studio and they say they guess they'll never know what happened and drop the story completely forever.
Why?
The movie's almost done, sir. We're not gonna open that whole can of worms.
Oh, unopened cans of worms are tight.
And so then Buddy impregnates Jovi and we're done.
Well, it sounds like a great Christmas movie, and hey, if it does well, we can make a bunch more of them.
What could possibly stop us?
Hi, this is Ryan George from The Thing You Just Watched. Please enjoy this slideshow from The Thing You Just Watched.